From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
There's no place in America for this kind of violence, for any violence ever. Period. No exceptions. We can't allow this violence to be normalized. You know, the political record in this country has gotten very heated. It's time to cool it down. We all have a responsibility to do that.
That was President Joe Biden last night from the Oval Office. This is Washington Watch coming to you from the site of the 2024 GOP convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Well, Saturday's tragic event has clearly changed this convention. The question is whether or not it will change the country by prompting all of us to pursue greater civility, even in our differences. We'll talk about that with the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. He'll join us later. We'll also get a sense of what is ahead this week at the convention, as the Speaker is the chairman of this year's convention. Also, breaking news on the federal case against Donald Trump related to classified documents. Federal Judge Eileen Cannon granted the defense's motion to dismiss the case based on their argument that the special counsel, Jack Smith, was illegally appointed. We'll talk about that. We'll also be joined by Alabama Congressman Robert Aderholt to get his thoughts on what's next over the next few weeks when we look back at Capitol Hill after this week. Congress has just a few weeks to finalize their appropriations bills before they move into the August break. And South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham had this to say yesterday on Meet the Press.
Obviously, God is not through with President Trump, and I look forward to seeing him later this morning. I'll let you know how he's doing. But for the country, we probably need to do some soul searching as a nation.
Well, I could not agree more. We'll discuss this much-needed soul searching when Dr. Albert Mohler, president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, joins me later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything, it's all archived right there. Also, I encourage you to download the Stand Firm app. Go to the App Store and get the Stand Firm app. Not only will you be able to watch Washington Watch, but you'll get all the action items needed to be a full participant in our republic. Well, following Saturday evening's events, when an armed man attempted to assassinate former President Donald Trump at a Pennsylvania campaign rally, investigations have already begun into security failures that allowed the shooting. The House Homeland Security Committee received a virtual briefing from the U.S. Secret Service today, and the House Oversight Committee will hold a hearing next week. Join me now to talk about this and much more, Congressman Robert Aderholt, who serves on the House Appropriations Committee. He represents the 4th Congressional District of Alabama. Congressman Aderholt, welcome here to Milwaukee.
Well, Tony, it's good to be here. Good to be here on Washington Watch. And thank you for your work that you do here, standing up for issues that we all care about.
Well, I appreciate that. And I want to get into some of those issues because I've been here a week. I was here for the platform committee. You chair the Values Action Team in the House, which is that group started about 25 years ago.
Yep.
FRC was a part of formulating
Joe
that.
Joe Pitts was very integral in the beginning of that. And it was
champion these issues in the House.
Yep. I was a young member of Congress at the time, 31 years old, but I knew that these issues or what has made America great. And I say make America great, I know we throw that term a lot around now with Donald Trump is using his theme, but really, when it gets right down to it, it is those issues that has made America great.
I'm glad you brought that up, because my take on that, for America to be great, we have to have these issues right.
Exactly.
Because to be great, you have to first be morally good and have that foundation. And that's the values issues, the life issue, the issue of family, all those things that
marriage.
Come through. Right.
They're
marriage,
all,
human
and,
sexuality,
and,
all
and that.
That
thing about it is what is frustrating to me so many times is that a lot of my colleagues, they're so focused on the money aspect of it and cutting money. And again, I believe in cutting taxes, cutting money, but if you can do all of that all day long, but if you don't have the moral values of your country right, then it really doesn't matter.
And this comes from a man who's on the Appropriations Committee.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I deal with the money, but I tell you, I know from speaking that money is not the answer to the problem
well,
of this nation.
Yeah, right. And what you've done, and I want to commend you for this, on the Appropriations Committee, we've talked about this before. You're one of the top members of the leadership team there, is that you have made sure that money is not given to these things that chip away at that moral foundation.
Exactly.
You have been working to make sure that that is not used against us.
And we need to even do a better job. I'm not saying that we've done a perfect job at it, but we've got to do better. But at the same time, we've got to make sure that we don't create a system where values is relegated to the lowest point in what Congress is considering.
But, Congressman Adderholt, it's no surprise to our listeners and viewers, because I've been talking about this for a week now. I'm very disappointed in the party platform when it comes to these issues. I feel like, you know, it may check some of the boxes, but certainly falls inadequate to address the priorities of these issues, the sanctity of human life, marriage, these things that have been core to the Republican Party.
Well, I think that has something that has set us apart from the Democrats for the last 50 years is that our pro-life stance. And I'm like you. I think it's crucial that we keep a very pro-life stance in this platform. Obviously, I'm disappointed that it's not stronger. And I understand the arguments. And, of course, I trust Donald Trump because he has a proven track record as far as appointing the right people to the Supreme Court. But at the same time, you know, I'm thinking 8-10 years down the road, and
right,
that we have a platform that stands. And everybody talks about, you know, send it back to the states. Really what they're saying, though, was to send back to the states, was to send it back to the legislatures, not only across the country, but also the national legislature. It's get it out of the hands
right
of a federal judge.
Right.
And that's what it meant by send it back to the states, not necessarily just send it
back
to the states.
Well, let me ask you that question, because I've brought this point up, and I would have brought it up in the platform committee had we allowed for debate, but they allowed no debate, no discussion. But you make an excellent point. When you look at the recent Supreme Court case, now it did not decide the merits of the case. It simply dismissed the case on the abortion pill, the mifepristone, because they said the doctors didn't have standing. But right now the FDA is sending these abortion pills, which are responsible for about 70% of abortions, across state lines, even if it's a state that says we're not going to allow it.
Yeah.
So how can you say it's just a state issue?
Right. Now we have to get back. What we've got to do is let the elected officials, legislators, whether they be in the state capitals or whether they be in Washington, D.C., decide that, and instead of having a federal agency or that is appointed or a federal judge is appointed. And that was the whole point of sending it back to the states. That was the term, but really to get it back to a legislative decision where the people decide.
So let's talk about something different happening this year under the leadership of Mike Johnson and others, that you are way ahead when it comes to the appropriations bills.
Yes, we are.
Because you don't want to be jammed again with an omnibus, lumping all of these together because it's an irresponsible way. We've got four appropriations bills already out.
Yep. And we're making very good progress, and I think that's Mike Johnson was committed from the very beginning that we're going to do this. I think he will continue to be committed to that. Of course, obviously, omnibus did go under his watch, but he had just literally become speaker just a few weeks or months before that. So he really didn't have his fingerprint on. Now he has a chance to really organize it and orchestrate it, and he is doing just that. You know, I'm a big fan of Mike Johnson. He's a great individual that, like you and I, he believes in those values of this country. And so I look forward to working with him from this appropriation standpoint from the beginning, as opposed to rushing these all together and spending just enormous amounts of money and not knowing what's actually in the bills.
Right. We've already talked about some of these offline, but you are working to make sure that the policies, as we talked about just a moment ago, the funding does not counteract the values that we hold. Now, you're getting a lot of these what we call policy riders into the appropriations bills, but it has to go to the Senate.
Yes.
And then there has to be, you know, a meeting in between. So just like last time, a lot of the pro-family, pro-life riders got, well, not the pro-life, but the pro-family got booted. Do you think we might have a different outcome this time?
I'm hoping that with this election, I quite honestly, I think that we're going to do probably a continuing resolution until after the election. because I don't see this passing all 12 appropriation bills before we...
Now, you say in the House, you don't think you'll get all 12 through in the House?
I think we might in the House, but I'm talking about as far as finish with the House and
well,
the Senate.
Well, the Senate last time drug their feet on it. They're not moving on it.
So
they want to do an omnibus.
I'm hoping that after this election, we can come back after the election, pass these appropriations, because there's going to be a mandate that people want something different.
Yeah.
And that these... issues, there's family and all, I think those are going to resonate. Life issues are going to resonate at the polls. And I know there are a lot of naysayers, but I can tell you at the end of the day, I think really this country is about is pro-life and cares about, you know, there may be various degrees of how people come down on the issue, but at the end of the day, I think we're a pro-life nation.
I don't want to get ahead of us, but are you concerned about a lame duck session of Congress and what might pop up?
Well, I think a lot of it's just going to depend on how the election goes. But I'm hopeful that we can keep anything that's going to be detrimental just at bay until Donald Trump gets in the White House in January.
We kind of jumped over this in the opening, but your reaction to what happened Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, I mean, ironic thing about it, I was literally packing my suitcase to come here to the convention to nominate Donald Trump. I'm a delegate from Alabama. And I turn on my on the news, and they said there was a disruption at the event there in Pennsylvania. I mean, my first reaction is like it was a protest or something like that. And of course, obviously, we now know that it was far from that. So, this is really history in the making. You know, there's been very few presidents that have actually survived an assassin's bullet. Now, there's been several that over the years that have been. They've been close to us at. There have been attempts, but when there's been very few that have escaped. And I think of Teddy Roosevelt, and I'm not sure there may be another one, but most of them have not survived. But Donald Trump did. And this is what we saw Saturday will be in the history books for decades to come. And so this is a very momentous occasion here, being in Milwaukee here now, nominating this man.
It reminds me of Ronald Reagan was another one back in the...
Yes, right, absolutely. And I remember we can't forget Ronald Reagan.
I remember just leaving football practice.
Yes, I'm like you. We're the same age. I was in high school. And, of course, obviously, Ronald Reagan was the other one, and that's the only one that I can remember.
This is to borrow a line from our other president, Joe Biden, an inflection point for the nation. I mean, are you concerned that, and I'm going to talk about this next with the House Speaker, Mike Johnson, but that our rhetoric, our political rhetoric, has reached such a level that we're at a crisis point, and we've got to step back
from
that? You
know, I'm a full believer that we debate the issues very aggressively, but at the end of the day, we don't use violence. And I think that we do need to be careful with our words, and obviously we've seen that the Democrats have tried to make Donald Trump someone that's the same as Hitler.
Right.
And I think those kind of comments, so on either side, are not appropriate. We can fight with our words all day long, but we're not going to be fighting with bullets.
I mean, I think, you know, we've got to come with full passion and conviction of what we believe,
and that's the way the founding fathers intended.
Right. Right. But at the end of the day, we should all be Americans and recognize the value that each has, because we're created in the image of God.
We are, and if we really believe that, then we'll respect each other. But at the end of the day, we may disagree, but we will just, you know, move forward and know that we live in the United States of America.
Congressman Robert Aderholt, always great to see you. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Tony. Good to be with you.
Thanks so much. Folks, stick with us. On the other side of the break, we're going to be joined by the House Speaker, Mike Johnson, as he steps here in the booth. Don't go away.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This 3-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back. We are broadcasting from the site of the 2024 GOP convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Joining me now is the 56th Speaker of the House of Representatives and the Chairman of the Convention, Mike Johnson. Mr. Speaker, good to see you.
Hey, Tony. Good to see you, as always.
It's been a while, huh?
Not really, but it was okay, great to see you anyway.
All right. Following Saturday's assassination attempt against former President Donald Trump, there were immediate calls for investigations into potential security lapses, but there was also a recognition that the political rhetoric in our country has really reached a crisis point. You were actually on the national media yesterday discussing that.
Yes, it's a tinderbox right now. It is, and the reason is because the rhetoric has been so hot. I mean, I pointed out, I was on CNN just a few moments before the president went live with his remarks, and I told the group there, I said, listen, it is a fact that our Democrat colleagues have painted Donald Trump out to be the enemy of freedom. I mean, they use this language all the time. If he's elected, it's the end of democracy. It's the end of the republic. You could tell people that enough, and they begin to actually believe it, and it spurs on what has now become political violence. Now, there's offenders on both sides of the aisle, of course, right? And I'm the first to point that out, and I've been doing that consistently since I got to Congress.
I was going to say, you had an effort, 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago?
8 years ago. We started the Honor and Civility Clause.
How we lose track of time.
Yeah. The Commitment to Civility was a document I drafted as a freshman in Congress that basically, it was a one-page restatement of the Golden Rule. We treat one another with dignity and respect. Of course, we're going to have vigorous debates and vehement opposition on policy. But the people inside the building are not our enemies, right? Our enemies are like Hamas and Hezbollah and the people trying to kill us. Your political opposition is not your enemy. And the whole secret to our system, the way it's supposed to work, is you have vehement opposition, but you have vigorous debate, and then you move forward. And we've got to do that. We've got to get back.
But you just said something that's very important: the vigorous debate,
yes,
the discussion, and this is something that has come about in this Congress,
yes,
that was central to allowing the minority, meaning not just the Democratic minority, but even the minority within the Republican Party or the voices, having a say in the process, being able to amend bills on the floor, being able to represent their constituents. That's something we have lost in this country, in the media and in Congress, and I think that is fueling this divide.
It is. I mean, you hear me talk a lot about trying to restore regular order to Congress, and that's part of it.
But it's been ugly, hasn't it?
It has been, yeah. It has been.
But you've suffered through it.
I have suffered through it. Yes, you've noted. Yes, I've taken a few arrows for this, but we're going to keep steady hands at the wheel, and we're going to continue to articulate what I believe to be, you know, the secret of our system, the way it works. These core principles are something we can't abandon. We do it at our peril.
But it's a messy process.
It is a messy process. Democracy is a messy process, as is often noted. But it's still the greatest system in the history of the world. And we're 248 years into this grand experiment in self-governance. We have to keep it. We're the stewards of it. We know how. We've got to be consistent in that.
So we sidestep the messiness at our own peril.
Yes, right. Exactly. That's a good point. If you put a lid on it, so to speak, then the pressure builds, right? You got to allow for that vigorous debate, but it's got to be within the confines of that system, and that's important to maintain.
Okay, Mr. Speaker, you and I have known each other a long time, and I know your heart is sincere in this because, as I said, you pointed this out as a freshman. I've been doing it as well. But let's talk about practically speaking. How do we, our viewers, our listeners, how do we as Americans, let's start with the right. Let's not point fingers on the left and say, you need to do that. What do we need to do?
Look, we need to change our perspective a bit. We need to understand that our fellow Americans, we're all part of the same country. We're all brothers and sisters in that regard. I mean, if you look at it biblically, as you and I do, I mean, you're supposed to love your enemies, right? Much less your fellow countrymen. You love your neighbor as yourself, as we're admonished in the scripture to do. If you do that, it solves a lot of problems. You just kind of follow that worldview, and it dictates your behavior and how you treat others.
Does it mean we change our perspectives or we abandon truth?
Never, never.
It just means that we are civil in our conversation.
Right. We never abandon core principles. In the legislative process, sometimes you have to give in on some of your preferences.
But
that's how it works.
But you build consensus that way.
That's the whole thing.
But again, I go back, vigorous debate, and that's one of the things I've had an issue with here at the RNC with the platform committee is having that vigorous debate. I'm not going to talk about that today. I'm going to be talking about it in the days ahead. I'm not letting go of that. But let's talk about the convention. What do we got ahead of us this week?
Well, this is an exciting time. It's a little bit different mood than
it might have been, right?
But maybe in a healthy way, Tony. I think people are looking at this in a very sober-minded manner. They understand the stakes are so high for the country. We are truly in an historic moment in the future of our republic.
I think we're at a crossroad, the overused term, a pivotal point, a turning point. This could be the hinge upon which this nation turns, depending on how, I think in particular we, but in particular Donald Trump addresses this moment. And he suggested that he's going to take maybe a path less traveled.
I've been so heartened to see his thoughts and comments articulated over the last day or so since the assassination attempt. He seems to have a very clear view of what this meant. God spared his life. I mean, it was a miracle. We all saw it. Everyone saw it. It's hard to deny. And ironically, in history, this is just a footnote to it all, but we used to call George Washington the bulletproof president. Remember? Because in the French and Indian War, among other episodes, he was running through that valley, and they tried to shoot at him, and he took off his coat, and he had four bullet holes through, but none of them touched
him. That was before Kevlar vest.
Yeah, that's right. Way before. He was just a colonel in the army at the time, but he wrote back to his family. It was a providential moment that God spared him. Here's the interesting thing. I thought of that immediately upon the event with President Trump, and I went back to read the story again, and it occurred to me that event took place less than 50 miles from where President Trump was shot, in Pennsylvania, also in July. Now, coincidence, right? Yeah. But there's providence involved in this as well. President Trump understands that. His language over the last day has been so encouraging to me. He said, effectively, God has given me a chance here. And that is to unify the country. That's his words, not mine.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to see how he articulates that and how we meet it out.
I was encouraged to see that. We were praying for that last night. We were here at Day Spring Church right outside of Milwaukee for a prayer meeting last night. And that's one of the things we were praying for, that the president would see this moment, respond to it appropriately, bring this nation forward. Mr. Speaker, when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about breaking news today. A federal court judge, a U.S. District Court judge, dropping the documents case, the big case, quite significant. And we're going to talk about why on the other side of the break. Folks, you're listening to watching Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. Lots of resources there for you. Also, be sure and download the Stand Firm app so you can stay up on what is happening with Washington Watch, even as we're reporting here from
the GOP convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We're back right after this with more with House Speaker Mike Johnson. Don't go away. Coming back.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us. We are at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and continuing our conversation with House Speaker Mike Johnson as we look ahead to this week's national convention for the Republicans, but also breaking news today that the federal documents case against President Trump was dropped. The judge siding basically with the defense's arguments that the federal prosecutor, the special counsel, was illegally appointed.
Yes. I mean, I think it's the right result. This broke just moments ago. I haven't had a chance to, excuse me, read the opinion yet. And, of course, I want to. As a former constitutional law litigator, I'm excited to see that. But I would say it's the right result. Obviously, Judge Cannon called this the right way. We've been making lots of noise, complaining and even investigating in the House Jack Smith's abuses of that special counsel office. It is an office that doesn't have a lot of oversight, frankly. And it's supposed to be sort of governed and overseen by Congress, but we've had a limited ability to do so because of the way they've handled it. So this is a great relief to the system, of course, to President Trump, to the country itself, I think. I expect there'll probably be an appeal of that ruling, but I think it's the right result. I look forward to reading it and delving into the details and then seeing what effect that precedent may have on other cases that are pending.
So this is really the checks and the balances, where there's been concern about the Department of Justice, the Biden administration weaponizing government.
Yes.
Here you have a judicial branch stepping in and saying, yeah, this wasn't done the right way. We have rules for a reason. We need to follow the rules.
That's right. It's lawfare. There's no other way to describe it. They have actually weaponized the system of justice itself, which, as you and I have discussed many times, is a great threat to our republic. Because if you don't have, in a system of, by, and for the people, if the people don't have faith in the justice system, that they don't believe that there actually is equal justice, that Lady Justice has a blindfold on,
right,
it's a serious problem. And that's undermined the people's faith in that system. And it is one of the things, frankly, that has led to this outgrowth of aggression and anger among the people, that they don't feel like they have that outlet either, this fair court system, this fair legal system. We've got to restore and rebuild that trust, and I think clipping the wings of the special counsel is a big, important part of that.
I'm going to go back to the assassination tip on the attempt on President Donald Trump.
immediately following, there were calls for investigation to the Secret Service. There does appear to have been some security lapses, although I think got to be careful, got to let that play out. Has everything become so politicized that we immediately question motives of, you know, these are men and women who are professionals?
Yeah.
I think we this political rhetoric may have filtered over into every aspect, that we question everything. We think there's a conspiracy or a motive behind it.
That's the problem. That's part of the problem. Obviously, it does seem that there were some security lapses, but you don't question the motives of the people involved, certainly not instantly, and that's the problem. There has to be a thoughtful investigation and a collection of the facts. I started that, by the way, within hours of the event. I got Secretary Mayorkas, Department of Homeland Security, on the telephone and asked him some very pointed questions. He did not have a lot of the answers at the time that I spoke to him, which is a concern, but we're working on that right now. We're blessed to have, like you, your former law enforcement. We got former law enforcement guys in the House Republican
right.
Conference. We have a former FBI agent. We've got lots of military experts and people who this is their specialty. I'm working with a subset of those members, and we're compiling a list of questions that we must get answered. The first hearings for oversight will be scheduled next Monday when we return to the Hill. We'll begin with the Director of Secret Service, Ms. Cheadle, and there's a lot of things to answer to. Look, Donald Trump is the most persecuted, attacked, and threatened public figure probably in history, at least since Abraham Lincoln. And he's a former president as well, not just a candidate. The idea that they would not have the greatest level of protection on that field this weekend is just unconscionable, and we hope that there are satisfactory answers to the very important questions we have.
Probably final question for you, Mr. Speaker, continuing along this discussion of the what happens in the wake of this assassination attempt, a recognition that the political rhetoric has gotten so intense in this country. I think social media is a factor in it. Everyone
it
wants to get these bombastic messages out there that get lots of likes and follows. And you've talked about this in Congress, how members are, you know, tweeting from inside of meetings, how you have people wanting to be social media figures. Does this have an impact on Congress? Is Congress going to act differently after this?
I will certainly be leading in that regard and in that effort, and I hope that and I've talked with obviously a number of members of Congress, lots of my colleagues over the last couple of days, and they're deeply concerned about all this as well. We all are. Everybody has a responsibility, certainly those who have a large platform, to set a good example and to use messaging that is productive and helpful. Again, vigorous debates on policy.
Yeah.
I can't wait
yeah.
to trample them on all the disastrous decisions they've made. But it has to be a competition between policies and perspectives and not personalities.
And I think that's the big challenge we've seen in this country. And I've watched it over the last 20 years that I've been at the national level. And it started with the left wanting to silence debate.
Yep.
We need more debate in this country,
yes.
not less.
Yes, and as conservatives, we don't ever want to censor and silence the other side. We encourage debate, like
right.
Elijah on the mountaintop, right?
Right?
Because we know the truth can prevail.
Right. Or the fire will come down.
Or one or both.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I hope and pray you have a great week here in Milwaukee. By the way, I've been here for a week. The people here in Milwaukee are wonderful.
Oh, it's so hospitable. It's
almost, I told some, I'm staying in an Airbnb, and I told the lady next door, I said, I thought I was in the South.
Some people feels like so Louisiana, nice doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, not quite as humid.
No humid. Yeah, no humidity.
All right, Mr. Speaker, we'll be praying for you this week that you have a great time here at the convention. I know you'll be speaking. What night will you be speaking?
Well, I'm running the proceedings today on the floor, and then I'll be speaking Tuesday night.
All right. Well, we'll be watching very closely. All right, folks, House Speaker Mike Johnson with us. Don't go away. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Dr. Albert Mohler. We're going to continue this conversation of how do we make our way forward as a country, and how do you and I lead the way? That's coming up next. Don't go away. More Washington Watch straight ahead.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation. bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. We're broadcasting from the Republican Convention here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I have to say, I've enjoyed getting to know a lot of the people here in Milwaukee. Been here for a week, and I tell you, the folks are just greatly, just very hospitable. They're great hosts. So anyway, it's a great place for the convention. Our word for today, well, it comes from Psalm chapter 51, a psalm of David, when Nathan the prophet went to him after he had gone into Bathsheba. Have mercy upon me, O God, according to your loving kindness, according to the multitude of your tender mercies. Blot out my transgressions, wash me thoroughly from my iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin. For I acknowledge my transgressions, and my sin is always before me. See, David, convicted of his sin, pleads for forgiveness based on God's mercy, which is according to God's character and his covenant. You know, we have that same confidence. In 1 John 1:9, it says, if we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. Now, don't miss this next important principle that David articulates in his confession. He says, against you, you only have I sinned. While our sin affects others, it is ultimately against God, for our sin violates his word, his commands, and his ways. To join us in our journey through the Bible, text the word Bible to 67742. As the Republican National Convention begins this week in Milwaukee, our nation finds itself once again at a crossroads, a moment when Americans across the political spectrum need to do some soul searching. We've been talking about that with the House Speaker. Well, following Saturday's attempted assassination of former President Trump, how should we proceed? All of us, not just the political leadership, but each and every one of us. How should we think about these uncertain times, and what can and should we be doing? Well, join me now to discuss this and more. My good friend, Dr. Albert Moeller, president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He's the author of many books, including Tell Me the Stories of Jesus, The Explosive Power of Jesus' Parables. Dr. Moeller, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Yeah, Tony, is always great to be with you.
Now, you said that Saturday's evening's events instantly revealed so many massive theological, moral, and essential truths, worldview dimensions. Talk about that.
Yeah, you know, Tony, what a sobering moment. And I attribute the preservation of the president's life to the providence of God. I mean, when you just look at the graphic and you see the blood right there on his ear and you recognize how close that was to his head, you realize how close the nation came to disaster in the midst of a very contentious presidential election. But, you know, there's some very interesting things that happen. For instance, everyone spoke of this immediately in terms of good and evil. So all the liberal, progressive, social constructivism, the anti-realism, all the suggestion that it's only conservatives who believe in an objective right and an objective wrong. You'll notice that when something like this happens, all that goes out the window. Everyone believed all of a sudden in objective reality and moral responsibility. I think that tells us a lot.
Yeah, and to your point about divine intervention, the president has made some comments. In fact, I sent him a message. I was appreciative of his comments, saying that he acknowledged God's hand of protection. Right. I'm hoping and praying this is a turning point for the president, understanding and seeing God's hand upon his life. As in a nation, that applies. In the piece, you wrote something that I think is very important. As we look at this point of division, where our rhetoric has become so heated in our country, you made a statement in your piece that just grabbed my attention. You said, those who see no higher plane than politics are increasingly desperate. Christians cannot share that kind of desperation. And, you know, and while our home interest rates, you know, may be tied to the next election, our hope should not be as Christians.
Yeah, you know, that's so profoundly true. And I thank you for pointing to that, because that's the basic Christian affirmation. Christians had to be faithful in the midst of the Roman Empire. Christians had to be faithful in the midst of Nazi Germany. Our political circumstances do not define whether we are called to be faithful or not. And so we as Christians understand we have this responsibility, and that's not up for a vote. That we don't depreciate at all the importance of the election. But, you know, the most important things Christians understand are not up for human election. They're not at stake in this election. The existence of God, God's rule in the universe. And, you know, that's not just a general principle. It's very personal. I appreciate what you just said about President Trump. I'm praying the Lord uses this, you know, even the blood on his ear, the blood that he had on his hand, and looks at that, realizes how close he came to meeting his maker. I can only pray that will be a spiritually healthy turning point in the president's life.
I mean, when we come to grips with our mortality, you know, it does one of two things. It hardens our heart toward our eternal destiny, or it softens it, realizing our total humanity and how reliant we are, as you point out in the piece, our very next breath coming from God.
Yeah. Yeah, and one day, each one of us will draw that last breath, and that's a very sobering reality. For the president, it could have been, for President Trump, it could have been, you know, Saturday, right there in the view of the entire world. I'm thankful it wasn't. Now we have to acknowledge that the evil that was undertaken by that shooter ended up with one man, a father and a husband, dead, and two others gravely wounded. But, you know, the course of the nation's history was not tragically changed there the way it was, say, in the assassination of four presidents.
Yeah, when I, again, reading your piece on that, I was reminded my time as a police officer, there's many situations where I arrived either as someone had died or died while I was there. And I no matter how many times I experienced that, I could never escape the thinking of just seconds ago, this person was here.
Right.
They were here. And in this moment of time, even while I was standing there, they have stepped into eternity. And given the circumstances, in many cases, I had a pretty good idea where that eternity led them to. Yeah. And it was something I could never get accustomed to, that this life really is short, and eternity awaits each one of us.
You know, the images from Saturday are just seared in our mind. You realize how close the president came to dying. Another man did die, two others gravely wounded, and then the shooter himself you know, a 20-year-old young man, we're told, completely destroyed his life. And, you know, you look at this and you just recognize what a parable of human sinfulness. But again, what an affirmation of the gift of life. And every one of us, I think, on Saturday night, we felt like we wanted to draw our families close and hug and pray and just be thankful for one another. And, you know, the Trump family is a family. I can only imagine what their reunion was like.
Right.
And then, of course, we have a grieving family there in Pennsylvania. It's just a reminder to us that we have to take the gift of life as a precious stewardship.
So let's talk about that for just a moment, Dr. Mueller. We've discussed this in the program, and I know a lot of programs focused on the mechanics of what maybe Secret Service failed to do and this and that. I want to focus on the humanity of this.
Yeah.
And also what brought us to this point. I was just talking with the House Speaker about the rhetoric and how we need to dial back that rhetoric. Again, going back to your point that for us as Christians, our hope is not in the next administration. Now, we want it to reflect biblical truth, and we'll do everything we can to make sure that that happens. But we should not be operating out of desperation. We should be coming from a place of confidence and truth and hope. So that should mean we should be leading the way and having conversations with those we disagree with, cooling this anger and angst that's out there in our society today.
Yeah, you know, Tony, I thought about something just in terms of what you referenced there. You know, in political campaigns, we use war language. You know, even the word campaign is war language. And we talk about a political attack. We talk about the strategies. And, you know, frankly, the warfare metaphors are just all over. And I mean, even when we talk about a war on drugs or a war on taxes or anything like that. And I think it's a reminder to us that we need to be careful with our language, because there are some people who do not understand the difference between, say, you know, a political campaign and a fighting war. And, you know, I don't want to overblow the existence of a large group of people who are susceptible to violence. But it's clear that our accountability is to show that we are a part of a political process. We're a part, yes, of a political contest. But we have to put that into perspective.
Right. So let's talk a little kind of practically speaking, Dr. Mueller. You know, some people are, I think, today are afraid, and I know this is happening in Congress because of social media, that there is actually more friendships across the aisle than people know about. But it's come to the point where people are afraid to be seen with someone of the other political persuasion, because if it gets out on social media, it will light up all of this opposition. And this is where I think we have to realize that we can hold fast to our convictions, the truth. We don't have to compromise that, but we could still have conversations and sit down and get to know other people. I think that's the only way we arrive at understanding and consensus in our society.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly well said, Tony. And I want to point out that what you're talking about here is just kind of basic civility. But, you know, we're both Christians, and so we have to put this in the context of evangelism. How in the world are we going to win people to Christ if we never have conversation with, say, non-Christians? And by the way, non-Christians think in non-Christian terms. And we need to be the people who lean into these conversations. I try to model that in my own life, you know, even some of the programming I do. You know, I talk with the people who hold the other worldviews. And, you know, have a civil conversation. And you know what? I think like the Apostle Paul and like the New Testament church, We want people to winsomely be drawn to Christ, and we want them also winsomely to be drawn to our own convictions. But you can't possibly do that without conversations, and that requires some risk and relationship.
Yes, I'm so glad you do that. I was just having a conversation about, you know, when I first arrived at the Family Research Council 21 years ago, I was on MSNBC almost every week with Chris Matthews. I mean, we didn't agree, but we were having a debate. There was a time in this country when people on the left and right debated, and oftentimes we would arrive at a consensus. I mean, that's what the legislative process is about, but that's not happening anymore.
No, and I think it's a problem. We silo everything. And so I appreciate you mentioning even Chris Matthews and MSNBC. I did that program several times as well. And the thing that made it fun is that Chris Matthews was so liberal, and yet he was genuinely curious about conservatives. And the thing is, you know, we're almost never surprised on these programs anymore because people know what everyone's going to say. And, you know, I can still remember, you know, the old Crossfire program and things like that, you know, and you know, people watched it because you had a genuine exchange of ideas. I think we're poorer for not doing that. I also think that, to make your point, that would model something, you know, our society really does need to see.
Yeah. And it is healthy. It's beneficial. This was one of my big frustrations, and we were going to talk about this last week, and you were speaking at the social conference there in D.C., I was up here in Milwaukee, but the Republican Party Platform Committee, and I don't want to beat a dead horse because I've talked about this a lot, but there was no discussion, no debate. I mean, we complain about being canceled by the left and not hearing out ideas from the right, but now we have the right doing the same thing to its own people.
You know, Tony, this is one of the greatest disappointments of this season of my life. And by the way, I want to thank you for the role you played and for the voice you have you have articulated on this courageously for the cause of life. You know, there's still a distinction between the two parties on the issue of abortion. If nothing else, then Joe Biden and the Democrats are pressing for a federal law that would remove all restrictions on abortion. But I fear for what this means long term for what we really care about in the future of the Republican Party. If everything's just going to be a matter of political transaction, and it's just a matter of calculating, you know, some kind of winning strategy, then, you know, honestly, we're going to lose the entire society. And it starts with the most fundamental issue, which is the sanctity of human life. I see this as a tragic retreat. And I have to hope and pray that it's an aberration, but clearly we understand the challenge before us, even in this party.
So it becomes a difficult situation. I've been having some sideline conversations here is, you know, they expect people just to fall in line. And I'm trying to explain to them, I'm an example of this. I entered the political arena because of the life issue. It was the bridge for me as an evangelical into the political arena. And to think that we would just walk away from this and say, oh, doesn't really matter. Just another one of those issues. It's like the marginal tax rate. Doesn't really matter. They don't understand. This is core truth, and we cannot, will not abandon it.
Yeah, you know, Tony, I wrote an article last week at World Opinions about the Conservative Party's massive loss, I mean, wipeout in the election on July the 4th in Great Britain. And the point I wanted to make is that they deserved to lose because they had given up conservatism, you know, 20 years ago. If the Republicans do that, they should expect to lose their conservative base because conservative Christians are not committed primarily to a party identification. We are committed primarily to truth, and that fundamental truth begins with the sanctity of human life in the political arena. And so I just want to offer a word of warning. You know, just look a few days ago at the conservative wipeout in Great Britain and understand that if the Conservative Party is no longer conservative, then guess what? Conservatives don't come out to vote for it.
Yeah, and that's a warning that I have been given because I agree with you 100%. Dr. Al Mohler, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
As always, Tony, God bless you. God bless America.
Amen. And folks, thank you for joining us today as well as we broadcast here today from the GOP convention in Milwaukee. We'll have team members here all week covering what's going on, so be sure and tune in. Download the Stand Firm app, and you can keep up to date with everything that's going on. Until next time, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.